This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 79. This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up on the show, we get the batting lowdown with Gary Palmer. David takes the reins in his first league game. And as usual, we answer your questions for this week. David, I'm sure a lot of us are very eager to hear your first league game as captain. Your first time as a proper captain. I think you've filled in before as well. So any nerves, David? Any moments of anxiety?
Well, I've captained before, but it's been a long time since I've captained the team. So yeah, I was a little bit nervous. There was a lot of rushing around to be done, as you can imagine, with a club team. You have to organise everything and everything's happening in the last minute, people dropping out, having to organise people to get to the ground, etc, etc. So it's all very exciting. So you don't really have time for nerves. And I won the toss, so that's always a good start. First toss, first win.
Beautiful start.
It can't get better than that, can you? And we bowled them out for 133 off the last ball of the 50th over. And if you recall, that the maximum a team can bat in our games is 50 overs. The field settings were a challenge because you have to think all the time. And as wicketkeeper as well, it's very hard to switch from wicketkeeper to captain easily. And sometimes, you know, you can still be thinking about the field settings as the bowler's running in. So that was a bit of a challenge to be able to switch between being captain and being wicketkeeper and keep your eye on the fielders in between balls and all the rest of it. The most interesting field setting I think we had was our leg spinner was on and he was bowling very well. But a guy came in towards the end and started just whacking him across the line all the time. And he was hitting him between sort of backward of square leg and cow corner. And that was the only area he was hitting the ball. So we were gradually moving players across, more and more on the boundary. And eventually we only had one on the offside.
That's brave, David.
It was, but it worked. He didn't have any more shots. So we just... Yeah. One on the offside was probably one too many, if the truth. he eventually hit one up in the air and got himself out. So it worked for us, and he, you know, wasn't hitting anything through the offside. So it worked for unorthodox. But I'm all for unorthodox. I had a couple of eyebrows. Yeah. There was a couple of other
thinking outside the box.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, my theory is try it. If it doesn't work, well, try something else. So we did okay. One of our spinners got 5 wickets, so he was happy.
Yeah, nice.
And we started well. 44 runs without losing a wicket. Then one of our openers went, and unfortunately, then we had a collapse. Everybody seemed to score 5 runs after that because the number 3 scored 5, number 4 scored 5, number 5 scored 5, number 6 scored 5. And number 7 all score 5 runs. So we didn't. They bowled us out, unfortunately, for quite a low score. So for about 65 overs of the 100, we were winning that game easily.
Yeah,
we had a very weakened side. We had 14 players out of all 3 11s. You know, as they always say, you know, after a team loses, you know, you take the positives from it, and we were the best team there for most of the game. Unfortunately, we didn't quite have the strength in depth in the batting to take it over the line. But next week, I think we'll have most of our stronger players back, and I can see us rolling the opposition out for a very low score to get some revenge.
You said you were missing a lot of players this week. Could it be because of... players didn't know other players, so they didn't really know what their roles between themselves were, that you guys lost the game? Because, as you said, you guys dominated for most of the game, and in cricket, it usually takes a couple of overs, a couple of wickets for you to go from a winning position to absolutely losing everything. Mm. So, other than that, could you put your finger on any other reason?
I think it will take a while for people to get to know what job I want them to do in the team. There's certain regulars who already know. You know, our opening bowler, for example, he knows exactly what I want for him. he's intelligent enough to go and just do it himself, so that's fine. But we had two young bowlers in the side who one has only played a couple of games for us, one has never played a game for us. So for both of those, you know, maybe they weren't sure exactly what they were doing. The young seamer that we've got, he's put on a lot of pace in the winter. He's been in the gym, he's put on a lot of pace, but his length is a bit back of a length now, so he needs to push his length up. So, you know, he needs to work on that. We need to talk to him about that. But, you know, you're not going to do that in the middle of a game. You can't go up to someone and say, come on, you know, pitch it up, because you just want him to just run up and bowl, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I do genuinely think that, you know, over a period of time, we've got enough experience in the side and we've got a good, you know, some good young players coming through. And when they settle in, you know, we're really going to have a strong side, as long as we can pick from something close to a full strength 11, which of course we couldn't do this week, and we really suffered for it.
Well, David, but you seem to have one of the best qualities of a captain, like I like to see in a captain, which is showing faith in the players. So I'm pretty sure you'd have a good season coming up ahead. But we have Gary Palmer, guys, with us to answer a batting question for us this week. Gary was a first-class cricketer, and he's also a Pitch Vision My Cricket coach. And he used to play for Somerset, and he now helps younger players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Let's have a listen into the chat Gary had with David.
This question is from Michael Schofield, and it's, can you recommend any drills to stop a batter from falling over, i.e. the head going to the offside?
Yes. One of my favourite practices is to build and enhance people's on drives. And generally people that tip over can't play an on drive. And when I say on drive, I mean the ball that sits at mid on, swing where the bat swings in a straight line from backswing to target area, not someone who flicks it off their leg and it goes through square legs. That isn't an on drive. Tipping to the offside is probably one of the most common faults that a batter has. There are professional cricketers that do it. They're international cricketers that do it. And for me, the easiest way to fix that is if you have a bowling machine and you've got a right-hand batsman in, you put the bowling machine wide on the crease as if it's left arm over. And then you make sure that bowling machine swings the ball in, I think it's number three on the settings, to that right-handed batsman. So then you need to put two cones out in front, one's straight mid-off and one's wide mid-on. And then try and get your player to hit the ball back between those cones. Now, if the person keeps tipping over, they're not going to be able to do it. So as long as they're aiming to get the ball through that target area, that's a good thing. But the key is that because the bowling machine is wide on the crease and it's left arm over, the batsman or woman tends to subconsciously lift their head up and look towards where the ball's coming from. Because as the ball swings in, they know the only shots they're going to play are straight drives and on drives. And when you're doing those two shots, that's like neutralizing your balance. That's keeping you with your head stump to stump from striker's end to non-striker's end, where you can hit a straight drive and an on drive. And the more you hit those balls through the target area, swinging the bat in a straight line from sort of first slip, because you would have elected to play a sort of on drive or a straight drive at this point, and you put it up and get your head at the ball, then the bat swings in a straight line to the target area. And just something I said there, head to the ball. Lots of players think that to play a good straight drive or on drive, you have to put your shoulder at the ball. As soon as you put your shoulder at the ball, your head tips over. So it's really key that they push their head to the ball, not the shoulder. The shoulder will look after itself. And the other important thing is some people tend to step up the wicket with their front foot too sideways, and also they drop it out too wide to the leg side. They tip over. So you need the batter with both feet pointing more or less up the wicket, near enough in line with each other. So you're quite a narrow target. Although your feet are pointing straight, your head is directly above your front foot, and just keep hitting the ball back to where it's come from off that bowling machine. And the progression of that would be to then put the bowling machine over the wicket. So you're now more of a conventional line of delivery, but make sure it's still swinging in. because if the batter knows the ball's swinging in, they'd be daft to tip to the offside. So they now need to focus on keeping their head leg side of the ball, so the ball swings in and arrives at that player under their eyes, so they can hit the ball sort of straight up the wicket or through mid on. And because you know it's swinging in, you know you still get straight mid on. Therefore, you're playing with the swing and you're not thinking about the offside because the ball's swinging in. And then you finish the practice with the bowling machine over the wicket, swinging it away, which is the conventional, you know, that's what you're going to face most of in a match. But by this time, the batter has got real confident at hitting on drives, real confident at hitting straight drives, got the feels and the shapes of what they should be doing. And now you take the ball over the wicket, and this is the most difficult angle of all for them if they were tipping over, and you bowl outswing. And hopefully the batter will play good shots at mid-off and straight and will stop tipping over. Every now and again, you want to fire the odd ball in at their legs just so they're mentally thinking, yes, playing in the V. Because if you bowl every ball outside off stump, guess where they're going to think they're going to hit every shot before you even put the ball in? And they'll prejudge, the head will tip before the ball's put in the machine and you will tip over. That progression can be done with a bobble feed or sort of a throw down. But you mustn't be too sideways in your initial stance. You've just got to get that shoulder out of the way a little bit, head over the front foot and pointing up the wicket with both eyes.
Thanks, Gary, for your time. If you want to find out more about Gary and his coaching, please visit www.pitcherson.com/Gary Palmer. David, it's a great chat. I think it's time we get into the question section now, David.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Welcome to the question section for this week. David, our first question is from Naveen, and he gives us quite a wrap. He says, thank you so much for bringing all these expert coaches like Gary Palmer, etc., into our shows and also putting up a fantastic show program. Cheers. So I'm pretty sure we can give us a pat on the back, David.
Yeah, blowing a bit of smoke in our direction, which is always nice.
Well, let's get into his question, David. He says, I'm an opening batsman. I play Premier Division club cricket, and I also played representative cricket in the past. I score runs decently, but I don't get that big of a scores often. My problem is that I get scores in the 30s and 40s, but fail to convert those starts into big scores like 100. What can I do specifically to build those starts into bigger scores as I'm doing all the hard work and throwing it away? David, something that popped out of me straight away after reading this question is his mental toughness. I mean, he has the mental toughness to get to his 30s, 40s, and maybe in 50s. But after that, he sort of loses his concentration. I don't know if that could link into fitness or something, but those are my ideas, David. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a bit of a classic question. You know, how do I keep my concentration? A lot of people, they get themselves settled in. They think, oh, this, you know, this is all right. I'm doing all right here, and then they play a silly shot and get themselves out. I think the key. I mean, this it's such a cliche. It's almost impossible to say it without sounding trite, which is playing each ball on its merits. But that is absolutely the case. Yeah. Obviously, you have to have an understanding of the game situation, but if you play every ball as if it's the only ball that you're going to face for your entire innings, i.e. you get one ball, and you have to, the one ball that you get, you have to respond to it in the correct way. You know, if it's a half volley, drive it. If it's a long hop, pull it. You know, whatever your style, particular style is, if it's a bouncer, hook it, you know, whatever, then that goes a long way to helping you. And then you're not thinking, oh, great, I've just hit a four. I'll just try and hit another four. Now this bowl is easy. As soon as you start thinking like that, start thinking ahead or start thinking back, then you're getting yourself tied into knots. So, yeah, it's important to try and stay within the context of that one ball. And one thing that I helps people focus on that is if you say to them, don't think about the game at all, just think about the ball that's coming towards you for that in that particular circumstance, then when you get to the end of the over, go chat to your partner, assess how you played that over, and think to yourself, right, okay, am I doing what is required in this tactical situation? You know, if you're opening the batting and you need to play a long innings, are you leaving the ball outside the off stump? Are you waiting for the bad ball to hit rather than trying to drive on the up or play a riskier shot? Are you playing straight? Are you keeping your elbow? You think about those things between overs And then when you're actually in the over, you just go back to playing the ball, each ball on its merits within the game situation. Beyond that, you can do that trick of, I've talked about this before, using the volume control, where you only concentrate very, very intensely just as the bowler's running in and he's about to bowl. For the rest of the time, you turn the volume right down, you think about something else, you don't worry about what's just whether you respond in exactly the same way, whether you've just played and missed, whether you've nicked one to the slip and he's dropped it, or whether you've just smashed the bowler back over his head for six. You just wipe that out of your head, turn the volume back down, think about something else, and then take your stance and then gradually start turning the volume up until the bowler's just about to bowl and the volume's at maximum and you're focused entirely on that ball. You mentioned fitness there as well, Kevin. I think that is important because it's been shown that the fitter you are, the more you're able to concentrate for longer periods.
Yeah, that's right.
And the more relaxed you can be when you're not concentrating, interestingly. So the type of fitness almost doesn't matter. I mean, as you know, Kevin, I say that, you know, it's all about being strong and powerful and fast. You know, that's the key to batting. And you shouldn't worry too much about doing lots of cardio and long, slow distance running and all that kind of thing. But if you enjoy doing that, you want to do that, that's fine. You know, that's going to help. That's going to help improve your concentration. Or if you want, you know, whatever, if you want to do bodybuilder style training instead of the type of compound training that I talk about, if you just want to do a few press ups and a few sit ups a couple of times, whatever you want to do, do some fitness work, whatever fits into your lifestyle, that will help you concentrate for longer periods, i.e. it'll stop your mind wandering, and it will also help you to relax more between balls, so you're not feeling as stressed between balls. And then the other thing is, practice the way that you're going to play. Don't go into the nets and just have a hit and smash it all over the place and maybe get out five times and hit loads of brilliant boundaries and think, yeah, that was a good net.
Yeah.
Go into the net with the mentality of, right, I'm going to play like I would play in an innings. I'm going to leave the ball outside the off stump. I'm going to wait for the half volley to hit. And another good thing to do is get some middle practice set up, you know, get some game situations set up, get your team's opening bowlers to get a new ball in a practice if you can, and say, right, bowl to me like you were bowling the first 10 overs of a match that we play in. And then you and your opening partner bats. And the other thing is, have the highest possible standard for technique that you can possibly get. Because as an opening batsman, your technique is going to be tested more than anybody else's. Really, really, really work on technique. Don't be afraid of working on technique. Don't think it's juniors and young players who are the ones who practice with a tennis ball and drop feeds and bobble feeds. County level, international level players, state level players, they all do grooving work. They all do work with a tennis ball. You just don't see it, but they spend hours and hours and hours doing this work to make sure that they're technically as perfect as they can get.
Naveen has another question as well, and he says, I'd like to know a few triggers or routines while batting. What I mean with trigger or routine is that generally some batsmen follow some sort of routine before playing each ball in order to get into the zone or to preserve their concentration levels when not facing the bowler. So I just wanted to know some of the routines that we can do best, like some phrases, like some say watch the ball, or some actions like kissing the bat like some Sri Lankan players do, like Samarawira in particular. I know they're up to the individual, but having said that, I want to hear a few of them from you. And he asks you, David, if you have any routines to preserve your concentration, any trigger movements. Do you, David, or would you recommend them?
Well, I'm not sure you should take my advice from my own personal experience because of batting, because I only got five on Saturday. So let's start with talking about terms, because he mentions triggers and he also mentions, what was the other word he mentioned?
Routines.
A routine. And I think there's a difference between a trigger and a routine. First of all, we're not talking about trigger moves, that pre-ball movement that you make, i.e. like backing across or forward press or something like that. We're talking about mental triggers, if you like, that the way that you turn the volume back up on the concentration. That's what we're talking about here, really.
Yeah.
From a coach's point of view, the important thing for me is the player focusing 100% on the ball as it's being delivered. That's where the trigger comes in, or the phrase comes in, that you're saying to yourself as the bowler's running in, and that can be anything that allows you to focus intensely on the ball. So you see them on the television mouthing to themselves, watch the ball, watch the ball, watch the ball. Last week, of course, Darren Talbot said sometimes saying watch the ball all the time can get a bit monotonous. So you can change it. Like if you've got your eye in, then maybe you'll change from watch the ball to hit the bad ball. I know one player who is saying to himself, forward or back, forward or back. He knows that as soon as he picks up the line of the ball and the length of the ball, he's thinking either forward or back, and he's taking a big move forward or a big move backwards as soon as he's picked up that length.
Yeah.
Now, routine, as opposed to a trigger, a routine is something that you're doing to not concentrate on the ball. You're doing it between balls. And the idea of a routine, I find, is that works best is the one that takes your mind off what the batting temporarily. So, you know, you get some people with very elaborate routines. You know, they twiddle their bat, they adjust their pads in their box. They, you know, they tap the bat down three times. They turn around, touch the ground, you know, whatever, you know, some kind of superstition. Even though it seems completely inappropriate, what it's doing is it's allowing them to just completely forget about the ball that's just happened and get ready for the ball that's just about to happen by taking their mind off it completely. And if you want to scratch your nose three times and touch your left pad, then go for it. You know, there's no reason why you can't. I mean, most batsmen just they take a couple of steps away towards square leg, don't they? And they scratch their guard or something like that. Or yep. As we mentioned before, at the end of the over, you check the score and make sure that you're playing appropriately for the game situation. You could have a little stretch your hamstrings, whatever. It doesn't really matter what you do, whatever habit you're in of doing, just do it. As long as it's taking your mind. What you don't want to do, one thing that really gives away a batsman is mentally losing it a little bit, is if they play a bad shot and then they rehearse, they shadow it afterwards. That is a big giveaway. Yeah. That they've lost the focus. They've gone out of, you know, the zone. That thing of being in the zone where you're not thinking about what's just happened or what's going to happen. You're just playing.
Yeah.
And just keep it simple. There's no need to be elaborate about these things. If you want to be elaborate, if it helps, do it. But if you just want to take a couple of steps to square leg and look up at the sky and think, oh, that cloud looks a little bit like a panda, then. Yeah. Fine, whatever works for you. Do you do anything, Kevin? I suppose you back down the order a bit, do you? So you're not going for long innings.
Yeah, that's right, David. But one thing I do try to do is, as you said, not try and think about the ball that just happened. Because as a tailender, you'd know there's a lot of silly stuff tailenders do that often they try and think about that ball, and before you know it, the next ball, they're bowled out. So what I try to do is, as you said, after I play a stupid shot or something, I try to think about the next ball. Because we're tailenders, every ball that passes by, we're thinking that we're just lucky to be there. So after every ball I play a stupid shot, I'm thinking, okay, I'm lucky to be here. Let's play the next one and try and survive that one. So, tailenders have a different...
Yeah, well, you do, but you don't really. I mean... I say you. I mean, I'm not exactly a top order batsman myself, but I can hold about the right way around. But I think it's the same principle applies. I think there's no difference. The only difference is with being a tail ender is that you're probably in a clearer situation than you are. If you're a middle order batsman, then you could be in one of several different match situations. With a tail ender, you're either whacking it because you've got to either win the match or set up a declaration, or your overs are about to run out and you've got to give it the long handle.
Yeah.
But all of those situations are whack it, or you've got to block it to either to save the game.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're playing a type of game where you can draw. So that's only two situations. And if you only play one day cricket where there's no draws, then there's only one situation, whack it. You're only ever going to be in a situation where you've got to whack it. Although you have to hit more balls, you've still got a game plan in mind. As long as you're playing appropriately within that particular plan, then you don't have to think about the ball that's gone or the ball that's coming. Well, you have to think about the ball that's coming, obviously, but you don't have to think too far ahead. You just have to concentrate on watching the ball. And if you're doing that, then you're doing good. But of course, the problem is that tailenders don't ever get to bat as long as the top order batsmen. So you never get to practice that, really, do you?
Yeah. Well, David, our next question is from Shubanka, and it's right down your alley, David, considering you being a captain and all. He says, can you give me some tips on captaincy? Like, what should a good captain behave like? Or what would be the perfect batting order? For example, who would come up first based on what hand he bats and his style of playing, that is aggressive, defensive, or moderate? And also, please tell me how to cheer up the bowlers when they get beaten up for runs.
It's a good question. I like the one about how should a good captain behave, because your sort of glib answer might be, oh, well, you know, he sets the standard, you know, he needs to dress smartly and be the, you know, be the one who. But it's for me, I think it's more than that. I think you need to be, as a captain, you need to be true to yourself first, true to your own personality. Some people, they're naturally very extroverted, you know, they're the heart and soul of the party. They're very much the center of attention. So being in charge comes a lot easier to people like that. But there's other people, and I probably put myself in this category, who are a bit more, they prefer to stand back a bit more, and they prefer to let people almost feel like they're leading themselves, if you see what I mean. So there's nothing wrong with either of those approaches, but whatever your personality is, you have to sort of know your personality. Whatever your personality is, you have to do that. You can't pretend to be someone that you're not. I don't think, as a captain, you have to go with your personality. The captain does set the tone, though. So, you know, how you behave does set the tone for the team. I mean, it's not going to be the only influence on the team, but the way that you behave does set the tone for the rest of the team. So if you want your team to be disciplined and to turn up to practice and to dress smartly, and if you want your team to be like that, you've got to be like that yourself, because you're the first example, you're the captain. The other thing is, when it comes to managing people, you know, man management, if you like, is that it's not just about telling people what to do. It's a two-way thing. And so, again, the way you're behaving is treating it as a two-way street between you and your players. So you want to be listening to people's ideas. You want to be, some people will just come up and tell you, you know, there's a player in my team who will come up and say, David, why aren't you doing this? You know, it'll just be right in your face about it. That's just his personality. He doesn't mean anything by it. So I know that. And I say, yeah, cheers. And sometimes I'll take his advice. Sometimes I won't. Yeah. And he's also the type of guy who he's a bowler. He'll change his own field. And again, I don't mind that, as long as he doesn't do anything too outrageous, which he doesn't. I'm the one who does the outrageous things. So, you know, listen to, but some people you have to, you know, they might be quiet. They might be young. They might not be sure of themselves. They're not sure of their position in the team yet. You might have to go up to them and go, what do you think? What do you think I should do in this situation? That's all right. You don't have to take their advice, but just the fact that you go up to them will make a big difference to them. Mm. And the other side of that is, you have to be tough. You have to be able to know when an idea is a good idea and when someone is just, you know, venting their spleen or whatever and they're not sure about it. So you have to be able to tough. You have to be able to keep people in line. And if somebody steps out, if somebody starts, you know, giving a team talk when you're the captain, then, you know, you have to say, oh, hang on a minute, I'll do that. You know, you have to be strong enough to be able to say that. Yeah. This is not really a behavior thing, but, you know, it's very important. As a captain, you have to be tactically astute. You have to base everything that you're doing in common sense. So you have to be thinking all of the time and trying to think ahead of the game all of the time. And that will help your relationship with players if they understand that.
And that sort of transfers over to the cheering up the bowler thing, doesn't it, David? Your relationship with the bowler and the bowler knowing that he has a confidence in you and that he has the captain's confidence.
Yeah, again, it's a matter of personality. Some bowlers will just say to themselves, "Yeah, I know I'm getting hit for runs, but I know how to get myself out of this situation because I've been in it before." And some bowlers, they just, as soon as they get hit for one boundary, their head goes down and they start bowling all kinds of rubbish. So you have to know what motivates each individual bowler, and some people, if you go up to them and say, "Come on, mate, what's going on? You know, I need you to bowl well today. You know, you're bowling like a complete idiot." Then they'll respond to that. They'll say, "Right, you know, stuff you. I'm going to go and I'm going to bowl well now, just to prove you wrong."
Yeah.
And then the other people who, if you said that to them, that would make it worse.
Yeah.
And then with those people, you have to go up to them and say, talk to them, make it an interaction, and say, you know, "Come on, it's all right. You know, I'm backing you here. Don't worry about those balls that have gone. Yeah. I know you've bowled well in the past. I know you could do it again. Don't worry about that. Anything else that's going on, just concentrate on doing what you do well, which is, you know, whatever that is. You know, try and get the ball swinging away. Don't do anything complicated. Just run up and bowl. I'm backing you. I'm keeping you on. You've got two more overs yet. Don't worry about it. Yeah, you'll get a wicket in a minute, and that'll turn it around." Give them a bit of a G up instead, and those people, you know, would need a bit of a G up. What was the other question? Oh, it was
the perfect batting order.
Well, this is the way that I think about it. Openers are the batsman with the best defence and the ability to build the longest innings. Not necessarily a defensive player, or they can be defensive players, but they can be aggressive players as well. Number three has to be probably your most flexible player in the team, because they might be in first ball, or they might be in after a stand of 150. Four and five are your more attacking batsmen. So, you know, maybe technically they're not quite as good, but that, you know, they get away with it because they can, you know, they've got good hand-eye coordination, and they can give it a whack. Probably, again, the best players to spin probably in at four and five. And then six, seven and eight. If we're talking at the top level, you're thinking six and seven are probably going to be batsmen.
Yeah.
If you're talking at club level, six and seven might be batsmen, depending on the strength of your side. I mean, the team that we had out at the weekend, six and seven weren't batsmen at all. So, because we had an unusually weak batting lineup, but then our first team, six, seven, eight, and nine can all bat. So, you know, it's just, they're not batsmen, but they could all bat in the top six. So that kind of depends who you've got, and sort of 9, 10, 11 are going to be your tail. But yeah, if you can get between six and eight, knowing what they need to do, knowing what their job is, and being able to deal with the game situation, that's always handy if you've got players who are. But you're asking quite a lot, six, seven, and eight, to be batsmen who can adapt to different game situations. Especially if you've got batsmen coming in at number eight, you know, that's not much fun for them, because they're not going to be doing anything except giving it a whack at the end and then fielding. So, you know,
exactly.
The other thing you've got to think about, certainly at club level or school level, is doing your best to make sure everybody gets a game. Because what you don't want to do, you don't want to have four really good players dominating. You know, they bat in the top four and three of them bowl. Because then, you know, you're talking about a lot of people not getting much of a game.
Yeah.
So where you can, push your bowlers a little bit further down the order, and your wicketkeeper a little bit further down the order where you can, purely because you want to get people who only bat in up the order. Do bear in mind that people, if you're not getting a game, if there's people who aren't getting a game, then why are they going to want to come and play for you week after week? Some people will. Some people will. They'll say, "I don't care. I'll bat at 11. I'll feel fine late to mid on. I just like an afternoon in the sunshine, to be honest with you." And you do get people like that. On the other hand, you know, if you're 16 years old, you've just started playing senior cricket, 15, 16 years old, and you're never getting a game, you're never getting a bowl, you're never getting a bat, why are you going to bother? There's a million other things you could be doing with your Saturday afternoons. Why would you bother?
Perfect, David. Well, we've had a couple of really good questions, David, but as usual, of course, we have to announce our Pitch Vision competition winner, who, of course, gets a free course from Pitch Vision Academy, David. So who do you reckon had the best question, or the most useful question, for our listeners out there, David?
Naveen is my winner, purely because he made me think a little bit about how you should approach the difference between concentrating and not concentrating, and the difference between triggers and all that kind of thing, and can you categorize it? And I'm a big one for that, for putting things into a kind of formal order. But you can't really with that. So, but the point was, he made me think about it and made me think, can you do that? And I thought about it and thought, no, you probably can't. But it sort of clarified my thinking on that, which, you know, and that was interesting. So yeah, let's go for Naveen.
Great question, Naveen. And to our listeners out there, all Naveen did was email us his question. He had in his title podcast competition. He emailed that into mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com, and it was too easy and he won it already. So if you have a question, just email that to us with podcast competition in the title and email it to mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And you can get other information, tips, advice, and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. And you can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show for free on iTunes, or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 14th of May. So if you want to get in touch with us or enter the competition, or if you have any other questions, please email us at micricketcoach@pitchvision.com. So thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sapphat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.